This is episode 354 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, October the 17th, 2011.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
Why would anyone trust this government not to make a complete and utter shambolic mess of the national broadband network?
Which part of time would they like us to go back to? 1960, 1930?
Can you really give that guarantee when you don't seem to know what peak speed is? I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, great. Let's give everybody a case.
The future is here.
So now technology has caught up with reality.
Ever since Telstra was privatised, Australians have suffered.
Technology has had a huge impact on our love lives.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McCollum and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. This week, the patent war between major hardware vendors reaches fever pitch in Australia, with the federal court imposing a temporary ban on the sale of Samsung's latest tablet computer in Australia. Blocking the sale of the Galaxy 10.1 tablet hands rival Apple another legal victory in the global patent war between the two firms. Both Apple and Samsung have been locked in an acrimonious battle in nine countries involving smartphone and tablet patents since April, with the Australian dispute centering on touchscreen technology. In this current round, Apple accuses Samsung's Galaxy range of tablets and mobile phones of being too similar to its iPad and iPhone, and requested an injunction to stop Samsung from selling or advertising the products locally. This decision is not final, but for the time being, Samsung's Galaxy tablet is not available for sale in Oz. The court said that Apple was likely to succeed at trial. And in other patent battles, Microsoft is targeting Google's supply chain, with the giant computer company expected to gain from Android and Chrome OS devices made by the giant Taiwanese computer and smartphone maker, Quanta. The deal could be significant for Microsoft since Quanta is one of the largest PC, tablet and phone makers in the world. The Taiwanese company supplies nearly all the big brand device makers, including Research in Motion, the world's second largest PC maker, Lenovo, and key Android maker, Samsung. Isn't it a shame that rather than companies bettering their products to win market share, they resort to blocking their competitors with legal disputes?
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
we hear from Canon, the maker of photographic and computer printers, about the recent study, Change or Be Left Behind. The ACCC fights back in Google case. RIM are in all sorts of strife. There's a new MacBook Pro on the horizon. Victoria's problematic MyKey public transport ticketing system gets hacked. And hackers breach Sony's system yet again. First up, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio news desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Apple's iPhone 4S goes on sale in Australia. Telstra's CEO encourages shareholders to support the sale of its fixed-line copper network. The ACCC lodges an appeal over Google's allegedly deceptive advertisements. And Melbourne's MyKey smart cards may be susceptible to cloning. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Apple's latest must-have, the iPhone 4S, went on sale in Australia on Friday last week. After a lackluster response to its launch 2 weeks ago, early adopters defied industry naysayers. Hundreds of people camped outside Australian Apple stores on Thursday night to get their hands on a shiny new iPhone 4S. Telstra's online store sold out of new models fairly fast on Friday, while those who pre-ordered from Apple online could be waiting until the end of next week for delivery. One of the new features in Apple's iPhone 4S is Siri, the natural speech recognition personal assistant. A number of technology journalists have reported difficulties with Siri being able to understand Australian accents and colloquialisms. Apple is selling unlocked iPhone 4S handsets for $799 for the 16GB model, $899 for the 32GB model, and $999 for the 64GB model. Optus, Telstra, Vodafone, and Virgin Mobile have all announced contract pricing, which is available on their respective websites. Telstra's 1.4 million shareholders will vote on Tuesday this week in what CEO David Thodey has described as possibly one of the most complex deals in Australian corporate history. Shareholders will vote whether or not to sell the telco's fixed-line copper network to NBN Co for $11 billion. Mr. Thodey is encouraging shareholders to support the deal, which he says is a very important and very considered recommendation.
Remember, this has been a two-year protracted negotiation, and in the end, it's actually the board's recommendation to shareholders, and they're absolutely unanimous that this is the best alternative for Telstra and our shareholders.
Mr. Thodey told Telstra shareholders they would be about $4.7 billion better off than under any alternative if the deal with NBN Co was approved. If shareholders reject the sale of the copper network, Telstra would potentially find itself competing directly against the government-owned national broadband network. It would also run the risk of the government pushing for functional separation of Telstra's retail and wholesale arms rather than voluntary structural separation, as well as being banned from participating in future government auctions of valuable 4G spectrum. Telstra shares closed at $3.07 on Friday last week. Australia's competition watchdog, the ACCC, is appealing a recent decision made against it to the full federal court. It was reported 3 weeks ago in Tech Talk News that the ACCC had lost a case against Google after alleging that the search giant should be held responsible for its advertisers' behaviour. The ACCC also accused Google of not adequately distinguishing between organic search results and sponsored advertisements. After Google was cleared of any wrongdoing, the ACCC has now decided to appeal the federal court decision. The ACCC's chairman, Mr. Rod Sims, said the role of search engine providers as publishers of paid content needs to be closely examined in the online age. In a media release on its website, the ACCC said it considers that the full court may find that Google made the representations in question and find Google directly responsible for the publication of the four advertisements in question. No comment or media release has been forthcoming from Google since the appeal was filed. And a war of words has erupted over alleged security vulnerabilities inherent in Melbourne's new public transport ticketing system, MyKey. The MyKey system, which has received an enormous amount of bad press owing to missed deadlines and cost blowouts, has now come under fire after German researchers allegedly discovered a way to clone the current smart cards. The Chief Executive Officer of the Transport Ticketing Authority, Mr. Bernie Carolan, responded to a report by IT Wire, saying the authority has no intention of replacing any MyKey cards already owned by customers, as erroneously reported by some media outlets. The Transport Ticketing Authority believes MyKey customers do not need to worry about the security of their MyKey card. Mr. Carolan also said the only available information available to a hacker would be the card balance and last 10 transactions, and that if one of the 10 previous transactions was a top-up, no banking details are recorded on the MyKey card, just the amount added. ITY journalist Mr. David Heath said the discovery was yet another nail in the coffin of smart card-based systems. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
It is the post-jobs edition, isn't it?
It is.
Very, very sad.
Pixar being one of the biggest things I think Steve did outside of Apple, in my opinion.
They've been affected by the changes that have been brought about in the industry by the way jobs gets things done.
$7.99 for 16, $8.99 for 32, and $9.99.
It's very impressive technology.
Zone alarm equals POS, point of sale, I think.
It's a horses bolted situation. Now,
my lingo works really well on my Android.
That's right. Qualifying.
Lena would like to point out that fangirls can be delusional as well.
Exactly. Siri, call my wife, tell her I'll be 10 minutes late.
Ah, dear. Anyway.
Australian.
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 With a Y.
Australian.
Australian.
What's going on?
We've had tablet computers for a long, long time.
There's one thing Apple can do well, and it's slick things that work.
It breaks two-thirds of your other applications that need to talk to the internet.
Is this any different?
Well.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Does anyone know what the doctor's name is? Is it Dr. Ron? Hello, doctor.
It's the.
It's the.
The doctor.
The doctor, correct.
But that's not important right now.
No, it is. That was what we were talking about before we came on air. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting in front of me, we have Lena Van Deventer, we have Dr. Ron, and we have Graeme Callaghan. Any correspondence, Dr. Ron?
Greetings.
Of course there is.
We're off and racing.
Correspondence.
I know, there's plenty this week.
Is this the Mad Minute?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is where to send your correspondence. Andrew wants to get straight into it, so without further ado.
Yes, shenanigans here.
Rob, via the feedback address, says, just listening to last week's podcast as I'm on holiday in Broome, WA, with Vodafail. Anyhow, just
they're mutually exclusive, aren't they? A long way away and a carrier like that.
And enjoying a holiday.
Oh, no, Broome's a great spot for a holiday. Cable Beach Resort, the best place in town.
Trying to enjoy it with Vodafone.
Has he been to the cinema yet?
I don't know.
The Sun, whatever it is. I remember going there. It was great.
Rob, let us know. Andrew's interested in your cinematic excursion.
The outdoor cinema there in Broome. You've got to go. I can't remember what it's called.
Just had to pull you up on the Strain thing. It's Strine.
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 Made it into the previously, too, I noticed.
Did it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's right. It did, too.
It did.
Yeah. No,
you cut it.
Yeah.
You should know.
Bear with me. It's all right. I'll pick you up shortly. Thanks for the feedback, Rob. Glad you're enjoying the podcast and you're listening while you're on holidays. TD via the contact form says, "Hi, guys. This story has been bubbling along. It might be worth covering in the show/news. TD's put a link there to an article on The Age, which says the Baileyu government has frozen work on a major computer project involving Victoria Police and VicRoads after the state IT agency, Cenitex, blew its budget by 20 million big ones.
Ow!
The agency, which was set to centralise IT services across the public sector, now faces an uncertain future.
Oh, there goes the online lunch ordering system.
Oh, it's been grounded.
Yeah. Some of their consultants get paid the equivalent of up to $500,000 per year.
That's why it's gone over.
Which is more than the Premier. A source close to the project told Fairfax Media they are in trouble and they can't get their act together. Thanks for the link, TD. We'll pop that link in the show notes.
And they're not allowed to watch television after 8 p.m.
No. TD is, though.
Yes. TD can.
Good on you, TD. B. Trigwell via the TTR contact form says, "Hey, guys. Hello, Mr. Ms. Trigwell. I've got a question for Lena."
Oh,
do we have a Lena on the panel?
Yes.
We do.
Present.
Have you ever tried to triple boot your Mac before? You're saying the other week that you dual boot your Mac.
I've never triple booted before, no.
Have had something like Linux, Mac and Windows running together before on the same machine.
The trifecta.
I have tried this and it does make it slow. But my question is why? It's not like they're all running at the same time.
It is a good question.
That was my immediate response to what you said. Why would it make it slow?
Any help would be appreciated.
Well, there's a few things. You could check, if you could tell us which OS is slow, that would help somewhat. First thing would be check that you've got all the right drivers for everything. And the second thing would be to check, that you've updated them and all that. The second thing would be to check that you've allocated enough free space to each drive. That's the only thing I can think of, is that if it's playing up with the swap space or the disk space or anything.
I was going to mention swap space would be a key one. Try and put, if you can,
at least 20
gig. Even make small swap partitions all at the top of the drive.
Do you want to tell people what a swap partition is or swap space is?
Swap space is... it's hard disk space that it uses as sort of an auxiliary sort of memory. So your computer has two types of places to store things. It has memory, which is fast and quick and ephemeral. When you turn your computer off, everything in memory goes away. But it uses that space as working space. So that's the equivalent to the amount of space on your desk when you're working to put papers out, spread things out, look at things at the same time, that sort of stuff.
Explains a lot about my memory then, doesn't it?
The other type of space is hard disk space, which is the equivalent of the filing cabinets in your office where you store things away and can get back to them later on. Now,
this explains a lot about our office. We haven't got filing cabinets either.
What happens in a computer is if you have lots of things in memory at once, sometimes some things, you might have more things in memory than you've got memory in your computer to hold. And what it'll do, it'll move some of them out onto swap space, which is like an extension of memory on the hard disk. So it's like having, maybe the best equivalent would be like a set of trays on your desk. So they're not spread out on your desk, but they're not far away and you can bring them back into main memory fairly quickly.
Yeah.
But it's not as quick as memory itself because hard disks are slower.
Could you call it like memory overflow?
That's a good way to put it, yep.
So when you fill your memory up, the little SIMs and DIMs and things like that.
So if you open a Word document and then 17 spreadsheets and then your email and then a
Photoshop file of 30
meg. And then you open another Photoshop file, that first Word document that you open first might go out into swap space.
Ah, there you go.
And then when you... and this is radically oversimplifying it, but it's a good way to think about it. And then later on, that Word document that you had open half an hour ago, and you now want to look at it again, when you swap back to Word, it might take a second to display, and that's because it's got to pull that that stuff back off the swap disk, back into main memory.
And that's another reason.
Might relegate the Photoshop file off to swap space.
And that's another reason why you should put as much RAM in the machine as your operating system will recognise.
That's why more memory makes it feel faster. Mm. The other effect that you might be feeling if you're triple booting off one disk is that just by the physical placement of partitions on the disk, the partitions that are towards the outer edge of the disk might be slower than the partitions towards the centre of the disk.
Warlock in our chat room actually mentioned that, Graham. Yeah, he said the ones that are further out might be slower, but he's not sure how much slower that would make it.
It can make a big difference, yeah.
B. Trigwell's actually in the chat tonight and has just told us that they have about 80 gig per partition. That should be plenty.
Yeah.
You'd think so, depending on what else is in the partition.
You're not sharing your partition with something else, are you?
And there also should be a lot of free space in each partition.
Yeah, not. I have 80 gig on each thing.
And it's 80 gig that's full. Yeah, But yeah, I would think make some partitions first. So if you wipe your disk completely clean, make the partitions the first three partitions to put the three swap files for the operating systems, and then you can. There's ways to configure the operating system to use a different partition for the swap files. And then use the outer partitions for the files themselves. And the operating system you use most, make that first so it's closest to the centre of the disk.
B. Trigwell, I hope that answers your question.
You can ask him, he's in the chat.
I think they need more RAM.
They need more RAM.
More RAM?
So. More RAMs, please.
Okay.
Yeah, but again,
RAM.Radio is where we are.
RAM's only going to affect one operating system at a time. RAM isn't going to be a factor because he's got three.
No.
I'm looking for things that are only going to change because he's got three operating systems on his disk.
Well, it seems to be only Lion that's running slow out of the three of them.
I'm wondering if
Lion
we'll
use Windows then.
Would Bit... Just lovely, lovely answer. Would the bit depth have anything to do with it? Like if you'd be running 32-bit or 64-bit operating systems or anything like that? No.
No, not really. Okay. A 64-bit programs and operating systems are going to perhaps use a tiny bit more memory, perhaps use a bit more disk space. But
have you noticed there's a lot of legacy 32-bit programs around these days? I know I've got 64-bit machines, and everything runs in X32 mode. It's very frustrating. Come on, guys, you can do it.
Recompile your programs for 64-bit. Exactly. Everybody's using 64-bit operating systems these days.
Yeah, correct.
We've got a few people in the chat trying to help. Trigwell out. So
okay, that's good.
Work.
So if you want, chat.tech.radio, as Dr. Ron said. What else you got there, Dr. Ron?
Last but certainly not least.
Oh, yes.
Sony fanboy. Via the contact
not
form.
Not the fangirl.
No, fanboy.
The fanboy.
Yeah. Now, this is waving a red rag at a bull. Hey, guys. I wanted to know why TV providers don't broadcast in 1080i or 1080p.
Yeah, so do we.
Because when I go to watch... Lena's smashing her head against her MacBook Pro here.
Yeah, if you want to get the best out of your new Bravia, just don't plug an antenna into it.
That's right, don't watch off-air. Because when I go to 7 or 9, says Sony Fanboy, it's almost unwatchable, especially sport. Like, come on, 576i is YouTube quality. And when you're watching it on a it on a 55-inch Bravia, it is ridiculously unclear, as it has to try to use the limited amount of pixels available and try to make it into a big picture.
If you're going to buy a 56-inch Bravia or 56-inch anything, make sure you've got a room big enough to put it in and sit far enough away from it. Because if you're going to sit on top of it, it's going to look less than optimal.
Yeah, the lower the res on your screen, the further back you need to be.
So. But even 1080i on that screen from the broadcasters is probably not going to look great if you're too close to it.
If you're only a few feet away from it, yeah.
Because even when they do broadcast 1080, the compression that they use to broadcast it makes it look horrible anyway. You're far better off watching content off Blu-ray. Hopefully, if you're a Sony fanboy, you've got a nice PlayStation 3 attached to it with an HDMI cable.
You better.
And a nice Blu-ray disc player.
And, yeah, go and go down to your local disc supplier and buy some nice content on Blu-ray. I'd start with Sherlock and some stuff from the BBC. And, go from there.
Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work, he says. Thanks, Sony Fanboy. If you'd like to communicate with the panel, the address is feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
There's lots happening on the show tonight. We're actually, hopefully, fingers crossed, technology being with us and people in the right space and planets aligning, going to be actually having a chat to Luke Madison, who's the group product manager from Canon Australia, about a new little survey that they did.
Right.
Hopefully he'll be joining us on the telephone, the old method of communications.
What?
Yes, one of those things. By the way, there's a new telephone out at the moment. Have you heard?
No.
Oh, it's got a 4 in it. And that's what we're going to talk about now.
Mm.
Yes. The iPhone 4S.
That's the one.
Dr. Ron would say.
That's what most people would say.
As in, for Steve.
Oh.
Isn't that nice?
For Steve.
Yeah. Now, Lena, we spoke briefly last week about your intentions of upgrading. To
what are your intentions, Lena? We need to know your intentions.
Declare your intentions. No, I have no particular need to upgrade to 4S, I don't think. I've got an iPhone 4. I think Siri is pretty cool, but...
Have you been talking dirty to your Siri? You haven't got it yet.
I haven't got one, but...
You're on a 4 now. Siri doesn't work on the 4 on iOS. It only works on the 4S.
At the moment, yes.
Yes.
But there's apparently no technical limitations stopping it from working on the 4, so it'll probably find its way to the 4 eventually.
Oh, someone will do something and it'll pop up there. But have you been talking... Everyone's talking to it and they're getting... I think Adam today, I was talking to him on the phone and he said, I'm so sick of a phone that answers me back.
No, I think it's pretty fun. A friend of Tech Talk Radio, Elroy, who comes on the chat quite often, he's not there at the moment, but
a lot
he might
of people
later.
There at the moment. He's not there,
one,
is he?
And I've been playing with his over the last few days. He got one recently, and Siri is a lot of fun. Siri can be really great. It's not quite up to the US experience because
do you have to talk American to it?
No, you can if you want to.
We have a good app of the week this week, too.
Oh, no.
We should just explain that Siri is the new voice recognition personal assistant that's built into the latest Apple iPhone, the iPhone 4S.
It's got GPP.
Genuine people personality.
That's the one for those readers of Douglas Adams.
Sounds hideous.
It does.
Speaking of Douglas Adams and the like, we asked Siri what the meaning of life was, and the first time she said, I find it strange you're asking an inanimate object, and the second time she said 42.
Siri appears to have
It has multiple people personalities too. Oh, dear.
It appears to have a good sense of humour, Siri.
Yeah, they've had a lot of fun with it.
I wonder if they update it dynamically in the background so that once you've discovered all the tricks that sometime, you know, keep everyone on their toes, you can keep asking it questions.
So it learns.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
Yeah, because like if a president changes or something like that, you know, you'd want it to update and do all that sort of stuff.
I'm sure
or if,
it would, yeah.
If something, yeah, all that sort of stuff.
It could well, be for cool. answering general queries, it uses a web service to look up the answers anyway.
A lot of it uses Wolfram Alpha.
Wolfram Alpha, yep. That's right.
Yes, yes, indeed. Yeah. Now, Adam Turner, we have mentioned.
The big thing about it is that you can ask it questions in natural language. You don't have to, you know, format your input to Siri. You don't have to talk to it like it's Google, like it's a search engine. Yeah. You can just talk to it like it's a person.
You
can leave your ins and ats and thuts and buts.
You don't have to say, Siri, weather, Melbourne, Thursday. You can say, Siri, what's the weather going to be like in Melbourne on Thursday? And it goes, slightly chilly, top of 16, blah, 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 blah.
So,
really good.
And then so you it have says, to waste time.
And then it says, that's Melbourne,
extra
Florida.
Words.
No, it got it right.
It got it right, did it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, we'll have to bring it in. I know Warlock was going to come on the show tonight and tell us about it, but unfortunately the machine that we do that with I left behind tonight.
Oh.
So Warlock next week, I'm sorry. But in the meanwhile, Adam Turner, the man who does the view from the couch, is doing a view from the front seat of his car at the local cricket club today.
Right.
He's using one of these new fandangled telephone device things.
Is he the proud owner of a new 4S, is he?
I don't know. He tends to acquire equipment and then it has to be handed back. I don't know whether this fits that bill or not. But we're going to hear from him about the 4S in just a second. But whilst I was on the phone today, he is researching Siri to a level that only Tech Talk Radio people could appreciate.
Oh, no.
And we're going to have to stay tuned for that next week. And there might be a few beeps in it. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Adam can get quite passionate at times, but is he deliberately putting expletives into the device?
Let's say he's putting it through its paces.
He's getting his money's worth.
He's getting his money's worth out of Siri, and we're going to see what happens. So fingers crossed if all things go. That's next week's couch. But here's this week's couch from the front of the seat of the car.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
The wait is finally over and the new Apple iPhone 4S is among us. But does it live up to expectations? I'd say there's never been more pressure on an Apple gadget to deliver the goods than there is on the iPhone 4S. The name implies that it's an incremental upgrade, which you think would take off some of the pressure. but the hype built up around Apple's Wunderphone is so great that we've been conditioned to expect every new iPhone to be a game changer. Yet, as with the 3GS of 2 years ago, the iPhone 4S is primarily a hardware refresh designed to give app developers more headroom as we wait for the next major redesign. The 4 is certainly no slouch, but the 4S raises the bar with an A5 processor, first seen in the iPad 2. The extra grunt isn't immediately obvious when you first pick up the 4S, especially as the iOS 5 upgrade hasn't crippled the iPhone 4, which is a nice change from previous upgrades. Playing graphics-intensive games was once the easiest way to see the performance boost between iPhone models, but it's not as striking between the 4 and the 4S. This is actually deceptive as developers are already designing apps which scale back when running on the A4 processor. FireMint's Real Racing 2 is a classic example. It plays almost as smoothly on the 4 as it does on the 4S, but when you look closely, you can see that FireMint ramps up the textures and the lighting effects when you're playing on an A5 processor. If you did this on the iPhone 4, you can be sure it wouldn't suffer. Spend a little time with the 4S and you see the extra grunt peeking through in all kinds of places. Opening apps, launching the camera, loading web pages. Multitasking is where it really kicks in. For example, the 4S is much happier running the TomTom SatNav app while playing music in the background. None of these gains are breathtaking. None of them are enough to encourage me to break the 24-month contract of my iPhone 4 and throw it in the bin. If I was on a 3GS, I'd be much more tempted to upgrade. Even if I was buying a new iPhone today, I wouldn't opt for the cheaper iPhone 4. The 4S graphics grunt might not be being pushed to its full limitations now, but it's an investment for the future. This is tomorrow's iPhone rather than today's iPhone. In 6 or 12 months' time, once app developers are pushing the limits of the A5 chip, the difference between the 4 and the 4S will certainly be more striking. Now, apart from the processor, the two big improvements with the iPhone 4S in terms of hardware are the reception and the camera. The death grip is gone as far as I can tell. Picking up, I've got a 4S and a 4 sitting next to each other. They've both got Vodafone SIMs in them. I pick up the 4, I can death grip it. It goes from 4 bars to 1 bar in a few seconds, and I know from other testing that if you're in a poor coverage area, that's enough to make it drop out. Pick up the 4S, hold it the same way, nothing happens. The bars don't drop, calls don't waver, the download speeds don't even waver. So clearly they've made a lot of improvements on the reception. And if that's what your problem is with the iPhone 4, then this could be a worthy upgrade for you. Even if the problems are mostly to do with your dodgy telco, this phone looks like it will handle poor network coverage much better than the last iPhone. The improved camera is always an enticing reason to upgrade for an iPhone, and Apple hasn't disappointed here. We're not just talking about 8 megapixels, but we're also talking about improved optics and better details in the shadows. From my testing, this clearly comes through. Shoot a bright scene with some dark features in the shadow off to one side, you can see a lot more from the 4S photo than you can from the 4. The resolution, I mean, it speaks for itself. I took some great shots of flowers where you can really see that fine detail when you zoom in on the 4S. Now, most of the other improvements with the phone are actually to do with iOS 5 rather than the hardware. The big one is Siri, the voice recognition, which I'll have a play with and get back to you at another time. I don't really want to rush into it. It's been a crazy day just trying to do as much as I can with this 4S and file as many stories and obviously get through something for Tech Talk Radio as well. I do know at this stage that the 4S is definitely an improvement on the 4. It's that extra grunt is going to come in handy. I wouldn't chuck away my iPhone today, but I'm glad to know that the 4S is there when I need it. Even if by the time I'm ready to upgrade, the 5 is around, this is a good incremental upgrade. This is going to help the iOS ecosystem grow. It's giving developers room. This is really a phone for the developers as much as the users, because this gives people like FireMint, for example, the chance to really push the hardware and do great things. It's not the iPhone 5, but it's pretty nice.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, it may not be the iPhone 5, but it's got all the bells and whistles, and it's got Siri, let's face it. If you've got Siri, you're entertained for hours at end at a time, and you've been asking it all sorts of questions during the break.
Like Adam said, couch there. It's not a it's not a 5, but it's a good incremental improvement on the 4.
Yeah, if you've got a 3GS, it's probably worth the upgrade. But if you've got the 4, maybe sit tight for a little bit unless you really need Siri.
Mm.
But Do you want to repeat the Siri joke about the one you just said before about the
which one?
Some
of them are not safe for
radio. The two iPhone ones.
It said, "Tell me a joke."
This is to Siri. Someone said to Siri, "Tell me a joke."
Tell me a joke. She said, "I always forget the punchline." And I said, "Siri, tell me a joke." She said, "Two iPhones walked into a bar. I forget the rest." And I think that's a reference back to the iPhone 4 being leaked by being left in a bar.
Yeah.
Which I thought was quite cute.
Anyway.
I've intentionally forgotten the rest.
Well, this iPhone 4 bizzo is just walking, running out the door. I don't know whether they could have made enough of them because they've in the United States alone, I think they've done millions and millions of the damn things already.
Oh, it's a strategic decision not to make enough of them. It's not like they couldn't have made enough of them if they'd wanted to.
Yeah, well, at least this time round, they've actually got them into... Like when the iPads came out, everything was delayed. Remember the iPads took forever to come over to Australia? They delayed it a month and
well, didn't we hear before that people who've pre-ordered iPhone 4Ss haven't got them yet?
Yeah, they were a week off, weren't they, Dr. Ron, I think?
Yes, even though people who've gone into the shops and bought them have got them.
Yeah, well, that's what happens with mail order from big organisations such as Apple, really, isn't
it? Well, no, they...
That's not Apple's fault.
Whose fault is it then?
When people,
of course, it's Apple's fault.
No, when people pre-order things from, say, Telstra, and then they say they're going to take ages, and then someone can walk into a shop and buy one the same time. Is that what you're saying?
No, if they pre-order, and they've got their delivery chain sorted out, and any reputable, you know, courier company, you know, supply chain organisation will do this, they'll be able to ship them out to all the depots and have the delivery date set, and they'll be delivered on the day of release.
Oh, you're talking about the vendors getting it from Apple, not the consumer getting it.
No, I'm talking about the consumer getting it from Apple when they when they've pre-ordered.
Yeah, in the United States, it works quite well. I know Lyd over there, when she ordered her, I think, iPad it was, it rocked up in the morning of the day that they were released.
Yep.
Little FedEx man rocked up and gave it to her.
There's no reason why, yeah, but to use your example of FedEx or whoever it is here that does it, they would sit in the FedEx depots with a big sticker on them saying to be delivered on such and such a date, and they would be delivered on that date. Mm. There's no excuse for that. It's only a strategic decision to make the things rare, and rare things are desirable. That's the strategy.
Grant in our chat room agrees with you, Graham.
It's a complete disregard for what the individual consumers want. To suit Apple's strategy in typical Apple fashion.
They're not the only ones to do it, though.
Grant's not the only ones who do it, but they do it better than anybody else.
So he's agreeing with you.
What was that, Dr. Ron? Everyone kept talking over
everyone. Yeah, I know. So I thought I'd keep talking as well. Grant says it's a marketing decision to keep momentum up.
I agree.
Mm. Absolutely.
I think a lot of people are in favour of your words there, Graham. That's good. Anyway, yeah, as I said, it worked well for Lyd in the States when they did something. Maybe it's something local in our market here that they choose not to or whatever, but anyway.
Did you see Lyd got her iPad signed by Woz?
I was very envious during the course of the week. I saw some photos of her two lovely children standing there side by side next to Woz.
Some great tweet pics coming out of her Twitter account.
Apple store there in Los Gatos in California, which, very good. Anyway, good to see Woz is actually on the beat these days.
Out and about.
Yeah. Anyway, iOS 5 also came out during the course of the week. Dr. Ron, have you done your update?
I have not done an update, no.
That was a trick question.
Certainly have not.
I was
watching all of the horror stories with people trying to update.
I did mine last night.
Did it work okay?
It went fine.
I think the issue that Apple had was that there were so many millions of people hitting their servers starting from the one time.
Oh,
that,
the download
that
wasn't
too much traffic.
The download wasn't the problem. I have an iPad which was running 4.something or other. I forget what it was. But anyway, I chose to do the update to 5... or to iOS 5, and it was a 700 meg download, which all in all didn't take too long to actually pull down, but the actual installation process was something that made me go to sleep and get up in the morning and it was all done. I was thrown up a couple of screens saying, we've restored your iPad and here are a few questions. Do you want to join the cloud? Do you want to download all your things and share? All the trick questions that Apple asks you, and you go, yeah, whatever. Came up to the desktop and it just looked like the old one. So The great thing I like about the way that the iOS or this particular update is it hasn't changed anything. Because you know how when you update something and, you know, like Windows puts a new version of Office on there and they move all the buttons around and nothing's quite the same? Well, on the iPad, it was all as you would expect. A few new options in the system panel or the settings panel.
Yep.
But other than that, it seemed to work quite well. I was very happy.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Now, a lot of people had trouble with it hanging. Or
I think I saw Warlock post some recovery codes in Google Plus during the course of the week too. I think it was Warlock or someone like that posting all these recovery notes for, you know, people that were having issues with Apple.
But having problems, yeah.
I've got a 3GS, which I'm sort of a bit scared to do the update on, but I think Adam basically said that iOS 5 doesn't break anything, which traditionally the upgrades sort of do on some of the older phones. So I might give that a wing during the course of the week, maybe on the weekend. Some homework, maybe. Upgrade the 3GS to iOS 5 and see what happens.
I've got to get around to upgrading as well. We can talk about it next week.
Yeah. Maybe. Now, what are you going to upgrade? Are you going to do everything, or are you just doing a few select Apple toys at your house?
Probably ones just the phone. I'll start with the phone.
Yes.
And then I'll see whether I like it.
Yeah, do you have to update your pendant?
No. My necklace.
Says she's got the Apple pendant on.
The eye necklace.
My eye necklace, no. Not going to update that one. Going to leave it just as it is. Okay. Might have to put a new battery in every now and then, though. That's sort of an upgrade for
At least you can put a battery into that one.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a good option.
Boom, boom.
Yeah.
Yeah, I might upgrade the phone first and see how I go.
Yeah?
Mm.
What about your iPad? That's harmless. Mine's happened.
Like
it was good.
I like to do things one at a time, and I don't like change, so I have to work my way into these things. And Lion is a scary change I also haven't done yet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Don't you have to go via Lion to go to... no, I don't know.
Nope.
No? Okay.
Nope.
There's some new features in iOS 5.
The notifications are impressive.
Tell us what's new in iOS 5.
Mm. Well, there's some new user-defined keyboard shortcuts, which is obviously par for the course for most operating systems. But one of the other interesting things, if you use navigation features in, you know, like say you use Google Maps and you want to go from A to B,
yep.
It now gives you the option to choose alternate routes.
Yep.
So you can, rather than choose the you know, route A, which is the first, you know, method of travel that might give you, you can say, oh, give me an alternate, and it does another one, and it does another one.
So yeah. Like when you look on Google Maps on your the web one, and you drag.
Yes, you can drag. You can drag the route to nearby highways and things, can't you?
Mm, you can choose which sort of direction it goes in.
All right. So Google Maps has done that for 5 years. Yep. Next.
It's hard to do on a touch screen.
All right.
Why?
Here's something.
Because you're pinching and pushing out to zoom in and zoom out. So it would be hard to actually click on it to move it.
All right. Something for those people who like to wear their iPhone in their back pocket and feel the call, for want of a better term. You can now have custom vibration alerts.
Where are you going with this?
Nowhere.
Is this the hotspot?
Could be. Okay. No, it's not. Here's some research for Lena when she does her upgrade, because none of us here have iPhones that... But anyway, custom vibration.
So you can customise the vibration pattern.
Yes, maybe the intensity too.
You could Morse code...
Oh, no. Yes, you could.
Have it vibrate SMS or something if it was a text message. And
yeah. Anyway, so you can alter the vibration technique in the phone as well.
Well, that'd go with your notifications, so then you can change the vibration to whatever notification. So if it's a Facebook notification or a Twitter notification, they make two different vibration... things.
Okay.
I get it.
That's good. Yes. Hmm. Had that on the Android for a while too. But and the other thing which we've had on the Android, you now make the LED, the LED, the little light flash for visual alerts. Handy.
I didn't even know there was an LED.
Oh,
did
you?
No.
Oh, well, there you go.
Where is it?
Well, it's...
Put iOS 5 on it and you'll find out.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. There's even software
options for it. Treasure hunt.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Give you something to do tonight when you get home.
Hmm. Maybe, seriously, where is it?
Maybe it's a virtual LED. I don't know. I don't have one.
I can't see it anywhere.
All right. So waiting on hearing about something useful in iOS 5.
Instant definitions.
Right. What does that mean?
It says, much has been made about iOS 5's new text formatting options. You can select a word or text string, make it bold, italic, or underline it. Obviously well publicized, but check out the other options that become available when you hold down a selection on a word. The suggest function provides a list of other words you may prefer to
type.
Like
a thesaurus or something.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Yes, and misspelt words and things like that. Hmm. Quote level, either increase or decrease the number of vertical lines that appear before the text, so you can actually make it go bigger and littler and stuff like that. Cool. But one of the niftiest options is define, which provides a tight but surprisingly robust dictionary entry for the selection, complete with a definition, usage examples, and often information on word derivatives and its origin.
That's cool. I like that.
So it's a walking dictionary / thesaurus just by pressing and holding your finger down on a word.
Very handy.
Yeah. It also allows you to cover your digital tracks, obviously for a bit of privacy and things like that. So I think they might have learnt that from last time. Remember there was a bit of a charade recently about, I think Apple brought out a patch because inadvertently that was their whereabouts was being stored and forwarded or something like that. Another feature, you can check your app usage and check the offending apps that are using way too much resources,
that's really good.
Bandwidth, whatever you'd like to call it.
That's really good. A friend of mine was having a lot of problems with, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, all her credit started being chewed up.
Yes.
She didn't know where it was going.
I have noticed this, even me, when I was looking at iOS 5 this morning. It shows you all the apps on the iPad and how much, if you're using the cloud to do your backups and things like that, how much space each particular app is storing.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is very nice.
Yeah.
So you can sort of, because you get 5 gig free
in the cloud,
and you can buy more if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, that was quite a snazzy little feature that I got. So there you go. There's a few extra hints and tips to make the most out of your iOS 5, and I'm sure there'll be plenty more coming out.
I'm a bit underwhelmed, to be honest, considering it's supposed to be a major operating system upgrade, and just very superficial things like changing font sizes and looking at
Did you hear what Adam said in the view from the couch? It's really a developer's update.
Yeah.
It's got the new processor controls in it for the new CPU that's inside of it, and it's a bit ahead of its time. Give it 6 months or 12 months when apps start coming out which take advantage of this technology, and it should start to sing a little bit. And by that stage, they'll bring out the new one.
So a lot under the hood.
Yeah, really, if you're a developer, chances are this is a good device to get so you can check your apps.
There's a notifications bar at the top, which I think will be one of the biggest changes for most people as well, that you can just sort of slide it down and get all your notifications in one spot, which is very cool.
All right. Apple's website.
Android phone does that.
Yeah, Android's always on it.
I know.
Apple's website says iOS 5 is compatible with the iPhone 3GS, the iPhone 4, the new iPhone 4S, iPod Touch 3rd generation and iPod Touch 4th generation, and both of the iPads. So that's where you can use iOS 5.
Very good. Now, Apple has fixed 72 operating issues in OS X. A bit of a patch came out, Patch Tuesday or Patch Apple Day, whatever that might have been.
Patch Apple Day.
It's Apple Wednesday Patch Day. Anyway,
okay.
So if you're running one of the later Apple operating systems, worth doing an update, as Graham would always say. He said, buy a PC, wouldn't you? I can tell.
No, you can update your Apple if you've got one. That would be a good idea.
Yeah. Go from a Granny Smith up to a Golden Delicious, maybe.
No, the cats. Apple
are they?
The cats.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not fruit.
Oh, okay, no worries. So anyway, there was another bit of news during the course of the week. And of course, what I opened the show with...
During the past week or so, we've had lots of Windows updates as well. So
tell me about it.
If you haven't noticed those, go through, check your settings to make sure you're installing all your updates.
Mm. And as I alluded to in the opening of the show, we've got this great issue at the moment where rather than manufacturers wanting us to buy their products based on what their products do, how they look, how they function, they're actually now trying to stop their competitors from launching products, especially in Australia and around the world, because of patent infringements. Now, when I recorded the opening piece of the show during the course of the weekend, Samsung was prevented by a judgment in the Federal Court of Australia from selling the Galaxy Pad, the Galaxy tablet, the 10.1?
By Apple.
Saying that Apple had a fair chance of winning the application. Now, since then...
Like in the last couple of hours or so.
Samsung has tried to block the iPhone 4S in Australia.
And Hello? Japan.
And Japan too, is it?
Mm-hmm.
So, goodness me, guys. This is getting a bit out of control, isn't it? And I think in Australia they had an issue over the touchscreenness, the way the touchscreen works and things like that. So... And now we're seeing issues in other countries about how the dual antennas work and the diversity. It's just gone from the sublime to the absolute ridiculous. So where's it going to end? Well, who knows? Whoever's got the deepest pockets. Isn't that the way the legal system works, Dr. Ron?
It is. Absolutely, it is. The only thing that's certain out of all this is that lawyers will get very rich.
Yes, their children will be going to private school.
Correct.
And very expensive universities.
Correct.
For the next little bit.
The Australian this afternoon said, just an hour or so ago, in separate filings, Samsung has sought preliminary injunctions from Tokyo's District Court and the New South Wales Federal Court blocking the sale of the iPhone 4S. In Australia, it has also lodged notices of its intent to appeal a federal court ruling handed down last week temporarily blocking the sale of its Galaxy 10.1, which is what you were saying earlier.
Yep. And I think even the mainstream media is a little bit confused. Some of the articles I've seen are incredibly conflicting around some of the IT journals at the moment because I've been trying to work out what on earth's going on. I don't think many people know.
Well, this is all like literally it's unfolding as we speak. These updates are coming through every half hour or so.
Yes.
From the mainstream media outlets.
Yes. Even to the point where I heard, and I don't know whether how true this would be, but Samsung are even contemplating renaming their device so that it doesn't it no longer complies with a court ruling. So it might become the Galaxy something 9 or something. I don't know.
Whatever
happened to 1 to 9, by the way, the Samsung Galaxy Tab?
They got blocked by Apple.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay, it took them 10 goes to get it to this point.
I don't know. Well, do you think they're going to rename it so that they can get it out and start selling it quickly until Apple realises and lodges another patent?
Yeah, the Apple iPad.
Yeah, well, that too. But the really big question that needs to be answered is that Australians are clever. We buy online, especially electronic gadgets. And what's to say that you can't log on to a quality merchandise store somewhere, anywhere else in the world, and buy one and have it shipped here, providing it's under $1,000, which I don't know what the price is. Do you know what the price is, Dr. Ron?
I don't. Of the Galaxy,
yeah.
I don't know.
Providing it's under $1,000, you shouldn't be slugged anything bringing it into the country. I learnt the hard way the other day, but that's another story.
You did. You had something brought into the country which was a little bit over $1,000.
Yeah. And let me tell you, they don't give you a discount on the $1,000 either. They charge you full whack on the full retail price that you buy it for. But anyway, that's... Yeah, so if you're clever enough, I'm sure you'd be able to buy from overseas if you really want to get hold of one of these things and give it a run for its money. Would you get one, Dr. Ron? You don't have a tablet yet, do you?
I don't. I've got a gadget of the week lined up, which we'll talk about towards the end of the show.
Well, don't spoil it.
No. I was looking at that, speaking of tablets. But, yeah, I think you get what you pay for. You have to have a look at what's around and what everything's worth.
Anyway.
There's a lot of choice out there at the moment, though.
There is.
With these patent disputes, I find it very frustrating that the media reports, and I have mentioned this before, they leave out the detail of what's actually being disputed. So it leaves us without any information as to what the basis... It's like saying, country A and country B are at war, but not saying what about. There's no context for the dispute that they give. This article in The Australian says... The legal basis for the company's claims varies across jurisdictions, but both allege that their intellectual property is being exploited. Well, that's just meaningless. I mean, that's covered in the first line of their thing by saying it's related to patents.
Mm.
It doesn't give us any information about what patents over what technology. Mm. Please, Australian journalists, give us a little bit of detail if we want it. That's what newspaper and printed reports are for.
It's very confusing.
I understand that it needs to be a 3-second item in the radio news, but or on the TV news. But when we're reading an article online or in the newspaper, the reason we're reading it there is to get detail.
In other news too, which is worth talking about, Kogan. Remember him? He makes all sorts of aftermarket type sort of gadgets relatively cheaply. He takes a panel from one manufacturer and a thing from another and puts it all together and calls it a Kogan device of sorts. He was going to import and resell these Samsung tablets, and Apple told him in no uncertain terms not to. I remember reading about this in the paper the other day.
He was going to badge them up as a...
I think it was September.
As a Kogan tablet, was he?
I don't know if he was going to badge them. I think he was going to resell them, but as what they are. And Apple said, no, don't do that.
Okay.
And that was in September. That was over a month ago, if I recall correctly. I think Warlock, I think I saw something in the chat there briefly go past on the screen. A lot of people in the chat tonight. Stop talking so fast and we can read... typing so fast and we can read them. They're going off the screen at a ferocious rate. Anyway, so look, yes... Let's get back to making good quality stuff and let the consumers decide which is which. And I think the other thing too is Google or Microsoft are taking the manufacturer of Google to town over some of their patent infringements in Taiwan. The people who make all the Android app, the phones and things like that. Apparently they've
found, like HTC and those sorts of people and Motorola.
Yeah, there's like a supplier. It's a bit like how Apple have their suppliers and stuff like that in China, Foxconn. Well, then Google have theirs, or the people, these manufacturers like Lenovo and all those people, they get their bits from other companies, and they've all been, Microsoft's targeting them now. So once again, patent infringement. That's the new get-rich-quick campaign, slow your competitor down options of our current time, I think, in tech land.
Well, it's a new method of stymieing your competitors.
It appears to be. It is.
Did you see that, speaking of Google, the ACCC is having another crack at Google?
They decided to, because they originally took them to court, and you reported this in the news a couple of weeks back, where they said it was unfair or something like that.
Well,
they were hiding things in search and not being clear.
That was the accusation, that they weren't correctly distinguishing their paid advertised results from their natural, you know, search results.
Yep.
And that was found to be absolute nonsense, as we said probably 2 years ago.
And also, they were being accused of, well, they weren't being accused of something. They were actually, the ACCC was alleging that they should be held responsible for what their advertisers did on Google.
I think the basis of that was that the ad, you know, company A would pay for their ad to be displayed when people searched for company B.
Yes, that's
so,
right.
So
hypothetically, you know, someone clicked on a Volvo ad and they were taken to a Holden website. And
well, they weren't taken there, but they were displayed ads relating to, yeah.
So the ACCC has launched an appeal against the federal court decision, which basically found in Google's favour the other day, didn't it? What's happened, Dr. Ron?
Well, the federal court found in favour of Google and said, no, that they can't be held responsible for what their advertisers are doing.
Yep.
And the ACCC says, no, we disagree. We're going to appeal the decision. So they've filed an appeal in the full federal court. And it will be heard soon.
Yeah, Chairman Rod Sims said the role of the search engine providers needs to be closely examined in the online age.
Yes.
True or false?
And he believes that Google should be held accountable for misleading or deceptive paid search results.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens then. Anyway, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Ron is here. Graham Callaghan's going to talk over the top of me. And Lena Van Deventer is nose down in her MacBook down the end of the desk there. What are you going to say before we go to the break?
My apologies. What happens in other media where an advertiser tries to put a misleading or deceptive advertisement to air?
If you're talking about radio and print in this country, not much. There is no governing body apart from the ACCC and the Consumer Watchdog.
Well, it's the ACCC we're talking about.
Yeah, but there's no form of pre-check before the ads go to air. If you're looking at commercial television in this country, you've got Free TV Australia, otherwise known as Commercials
so
Advice.
So if I write and record and produce a deceptive radio advertisement and submit it to my local commercial radio station,
it'll go to air.
They won't check it or reject it?
No. It'll be complaints to an organisation before it comes back to get you.
Would the radio station be held responsible?
Nah, safe harbour.
So why doesn't that apply to Google? Isn't it the same thing?
I don't know. It may be. But yet the free-to-air TV stations go through Free TV Australia. So if you make a claim or, if you say, I'm the biggest, I'm the best, they'll go, prove it. Because having made a lot of television commercials in my day, especially for big telephone companies, when you say the largest mobile network, you have to substantiate that.
You have to be able to substantiate it.
Yeah. And the
TV station has to check that.
Now, the TV station doesn't check it because that's their organisation. Channel 7, Channel 10 and Channel 9 are part of Free TV Australia. And it's basically, rather than having a legal department in each TV station, I'm paraphrasing here, they have one which they all fund.
Yeah. So
and that is...
It doesn't matter what the mechanics are. They still fund it and it still gets done.
Yeah, correct. But it's one body that does it, which is Free TV Australia. Which is good. And so if you sit up there, Graham,
so
and say...
So obviously they feel the need to check these things before they go to
air. Do.
That's the TV stations must.
They do.
If they're going to pay money for it.
Yep. So therefore, if you come up and say, I've got the biggest store in the land, they'll say, prove it, and you have to prove it. Or if you say any claim of any kind on television, it needs to be proven and substantiated before it goes to air.
It's interesting that it's different on radio and TV.
It's very different.
Why shouldn't it be the same for both? And therefore, we'd be able to say, well, if it's the same for both of those, we should apply that to other media as well.
It's worth a question answer. I don't know the answer to that.
No. All right.
It's one of those things. Anyway, buy beware. I think that's what it comes down to. This is Tech Talk Radio. Hopefully, when we come back, we're going to chat to Canon and find out a little bit about a recent survey that they did. In the meanwhile, come and join us. chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You should have seen the odd spot that Andrew sent me. That's with tone raised.
Sorry, Adelaide. Sorry, Brisbane. Sorry, Canberra.
Sorry, Darwin.
Oh, it'll get there in the end.
A question for Lena, gamer and mum.
Hey, that's me.
It's no good writing an agreement that's only enforceable in 1850.
Java, my friend. Java.
Yep.
Could be Java. Yeah.
Have you got a spare Google Plus invite? Yeah, it's in the mail.
Yay, my first nerd alert.
First nerd alert,
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. This is Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. And the regular crew is in this evening. If you'd like to join us live while we're going on the radio, you can. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. There's plenty of people in there tonight. I think Cisco was there earlier on too, I think.
Cisco had to go to bed. I think.
Oh, did he? Is that where he, I thought he disappeared?
Lots of people there, though.
The other side of the planet listening to us at the moment. Welcome, wherever you might happen to be, even if you're listening to us on the Community Radio Network on Friday morning. Hello. All right. During the course of the technological revolution, as new gadgets and new toys come out, new iPhones come out, people, some people just jump for the opportunity of a new gadget, a new thing in the toy box. Dr. On, I know you are. You love a new toy, a new gadget, don't you? I saw all those old phones on your desk at home. You're G-plussing during the course of the week. What were you doing with all those?
They weren't old phones. They were brand new ones.
Were they?
Straight out of the box.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Did you think they were old?
They looked old.
Did they?
Yeah. Oh. I said, what are you doing with all those? They were big. Maybe that's why I thought it was old.
Brand new SIP handsets they were.
Yeah. Do you find that people embrace this new technology quite easily in your field of business and communications and the likes?
My experience is that Australians are early adopters.
Yeah.
And they love new gadgets and new things and new concepts, and they're willing to pay money just to try stuff out.
Really?
And have the leading edge, bleeding edge technology, yeah.
And what about as a consumer? If you go into a venue and they've got new technology there, do you sort of go up there and have a go at it? Or do you FPOS or use your magic cards and things like that? Or are you a bit reticent? Are you a bit cagey about, how does this work?
No, I'm definitely an early adopter type person.
I must admit, I'm with you on that. There's new things to play with. I'll go and give it a whirl.
Do you think we're early adopters because we spent our childhood getting everything 3, 5, 7 years after everyone else in the world?
I don't know. That's a very good question.
What's the reaction to that, you reckon?
I think it might be.
Mm.
Little Australia getting forgotten, and now that we're not, we go, yay, new stuff.
Well, Canon Australia, they did a survey recently, which was very interesting, and we're going to talk about that tonight. And one of the results of their surveys was in relation to whether or not we're a bit afraid of the unknown and how businesses sort of, cotten on with new technology. Which ones...
But that's a different question. Individuals are early adopters, but businesses are very conservative a lot of the time.
Correct. Now, joining us on the telephone is Luke Madison, the Group Product Manager, Business Marketing for Canon Australia. Good evening, Luke. Thanks for joining us.
No problem at all, Andrew. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. Now, you've done a very interesting survey here in relation to how businesses adopt to technology. What were the findings? Did anything really jump out at you?
Well, there's probably a couple of key takeaways on it all in general, but I think probably the most interesting point, if you're looking for a quick snapshot, was probably, despite 86% of respondents agreeing that change was important, only just under half actually took a proactive stance on change within business. So, while agreeing that this is a really important part and a really important key, deliverable in their business in accordance to adapting to change, most people didn't really take a proactive stance towards it.
So we had a lot of fence-sitters, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, a lot of people sort of take a bit of a wait-and-see approach, Andrew, is probably the way of describing it. And it really comes down to a number of factors, but certainly that was probably the key take-out from the survey.
All right. The number one barrier to change was people, citing the fear of the unknown. Was that also part of the survey in respect to were people or individuals afraid of the technology, which as a result slowed down the corporate take-up of technology?
I think it's one of those things that people became, throughout the course of the research, as you saw from the point of view, we saw change being important, and that most people felt their businesses weren't very prepared to make change, with people being the biggest barrier, as you've mentioned. But it probably comes down to a number of things. And when you look at it, the most, referenced point in terms of being, people being resistant to change was around fear of the unknown or a lack of trust in change. And that probably comes down to the communication program around change. So it sort of gives you the idea that it's really beyond technology itself. It more comes down to the processes you put in place to manage the change process. So, and within that, probably communication being the most important part of that.
So communications, what about the technology that we use to communicate? Were people like wary of devices that hang on cash registers or how they do their transactions? Was that a stumbling point from the merchant's point of view? Were they upset about those sort of technologies, not sure about how they worked?
Not a specific area we covered in the survey, Andrew. It was more around a general view of technology and how businesses adapt to that, not specific types of technology that we referenced within the case study or within the white paper, I should say. So it was really more of a focus on technology in the whole and how businesses adapt to the changes that technology brings to a business.
Luke, do we know if the size of an organisation has any bearing on how willing they are to embrace change. Because I know from my experience that the smaller an organisation, the easier it is to facilitate change, especially when you're moving from one technology to another. But in the, as an organisation gets larger and larger, and you get like government agencies with hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of people, change happens very slowly, doesn't it?
It can differ on size, but again, the survey was more or less a look at a wide range of businesses varying in size, and was more taken from the point of view that we looked at, I guess, business leaders and then also employees that were working within an organisation, and looked at the sort of viewpoints from both a management point of view and an end user's perspective.
All right, having a look at one of the survey results here, what will be the biggest change in the next 10 years? 43% of respondents said technological advances, but there was quite a different or a large sort of proportion of other people that then said, which was at 19%, changes within the company. So it seems to highlight the fact that, as you were sort of saying, it is really the management of these companies which is the next in line, I guess, to stifle change.
I think it's more a point that technology is always going to be the driver, Andrew, and if you think about it from an organisation point of view, one of the key drivers for productivity change or productivity increases is around technology. So, you know, you would think that, and I guess it sort of played out what we would have seen as being the biggest driver of change in terms of technology, but I think it's a real wake-up call for business to be able to think that, you know, from a perspective of what management is communicating down to its employees and what the employees think that change actually means can quite often be two very different things.
Luke, Graham Callaghan here. Did your survey look at the reasons for people being reluctant to adopt changes? I'm thinking of people maybe having been burnt by badly managed changes in the past, systems put in that didn't work the way they should have, and maybe
fear sort of thing.
Yeah, and that's I've seen examples where companies have gone through a change process that's gone badly, and it turns them into ultra conservatives and really makes them reluctant to do anything different.
Yeah, well, I guess the key points, Graham, that were pulled out were that fear of the unknown, the lack of trust in change, and a sort of a lack of vision or understanding about the change internally. And then probably the last one, sort of the last major point referenced by respondents was around sort of not understanding or seeing a lack of direction in leadership from senior management. So, you know, when you talk about people being a barrier, it does seem to stem back to how change is communicated to them. And I guess you make a point there, Graham, that, you know, at the end of the day, a change project, and especially around technology, is only as good as the uptake of that technology from end users. And you think about it in the way that that all of us work, we get comfortable within a process and within a way of doing things. And change can often, you know, flip that on its head. So it's important to manage the process and ensure that, you know, that the end users who are actually utilising a piece of technology are aware of why the change is happening, how it's going to affect their daily work life, and then what the benefits are to them in the long run, so that they're sort of more open or welcome to see that change within the business.
So that's taking a wider view of change management and making sure that there's personnel issues are dealt with as well as technical ones.
Yeah, 100%. I think the key thing within any change is really making sure that the people who are using it are adopting it, and as you quite rightly say, that, you know, with technology, sure, we can see some great productivity benefits from it, but at the end of the day, those productivity benefits can only be realised through, you know, actually implementing the technology in the way it was sought to be implemented. So from our perspective, it's absolutely key to delivering a very, very, you know, well thought out and successful technology project.
We're talking to Luke Madison, who's the Group Product Manager of Business Marketing for Canon Australia, about their recent survey, Change or Be Left Behind. Luke, a question to you in relation to different industry verticals. Did you find any, or was it quite different, the results from one sector to another?
Yeah, there were. There were some really interesting results across the different industries. A lot of the trends played out to be quite similar in terms of, you know, the reasons or barriers for change. We saw quite a lot of those stay the same across industries, with a small variance across them. But probably the most interesting was around the willingness to change. In other words, where do the respondents, of which there were roughly 1,000 in total, 300 of those being business leaders within an organisation and 700 of them being employees, one of the biggest change across the verticals was where they ranked us in terms of willingness to change. Now, funnily enough, finance was the most optimistic vertical in saying that Australia actually was very, very welcome and open to change, and probably ranked up in amongst the top nations globally in terms of being willing to change. And of the others, retail was probably the most pessimistic towards change and had the highest scores around in terms of being actually, you know, having fear of the unknown, etc., around change. So a couple of different verticals with different approaches to how, you know, willing the Australian market is to adopt change, which was quite interesting. Overall, the average in terms of executives rating us was about fourth in terms of the global stage. If you looked at it from an employee perspective, it was actually a little bit higher. But, you know, there was sort of that wait and see stance overall as an average, but it did vary, you know, probably the most across industries of any of the sort of responses that we saw.
Did that surprise you, the results? I guess finance is traditionally a technologically based organisation anyway, but I would have thought people in retail would have loved to have taken an opportunity to make that process a little bit easier or something like that. So did those results, were they surprising to you at all?
Yeah, some of them were. I think probably not too surprising in terms of the retail sense, in terms of their adoption to change, but I guess that probably from an overall perspective, with people ranking as fourth, was probably a little bit outside what we maybe thought we would have seen. But, you know, it probably shows that Australia is a little bit more of a conservative country when it comes to change, and we do take that sort of wait and see approach to see what happens in some of the other geographies elsewhere around the world, to see how, you know, particularly technology platforms maybe from a business perspective anyway seem to be rolled out and how successful they are before we make the jump and joining them in actually implementing and adopting those changes.
I sort of find that a bit surprising based on the fact that we tend to pride ourselves on being early adopters in technology. I think, as Lena was saying before, like, everyone jumps at these new gadgets, but maybe not. Maybe when it comes to doing the finance side of stuff or doing the business side of the deal, we're a bit conservative. Where did you mentioned before that Australia sat fourth in the global terms of willingness to change. Who topped the survey? Who was the most willing to change?
Probably the most interesting in terms of the respondents from both executives and employees, that they saw that China and India were the most open to change countries in the world. And that maybe has to do more with the fact that two of the faster growing economies in the world, and obviously technology is powering a lot of those changes within their countries.
Would it be population based as well? They're very, very big populated countries.
Not something we considered in the survey, certainly not something we asked the respondents to rank, but certainly it was just seen that of the most technologically or most change, willing to see change in terms of nations, they were the two that were identified by the respondents as they saw why. We didn't delve too much into the reasons of why that was.
Underneath Australia in the survey was Japan. Was that surprising too? Just minor, 3% underneath Australia?
Yeah, again, I think it's more of a looking at the fact that people probably see the most, or I guess it's more like a changing dynamic in terms of global power. People are seeing a shift away from some of the traditional countries towards those more developing nations. And I think it was interesting, we saw that, you know, some of those more established economies like, say, Japan, the US, or even some of those in Europe were ranked lower than perhaps some of those emerging nations were.
I can also notice here in the results too a lack of European-based countries. The only one that really grabs a mention there is the UK. Maybe something to do with global uncertainty, the euro and things like that, maybe?
Yeah, perhaps it could be, and I think it was, again, more of that shift in terms of what, you know, in terms of developing and emerging countries in terms of adopting change and fast-moving, growing economies versus maybe a look at some of the more traditional, conservative types of economies that, you know, maybe were seen as the leaders, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago.
What do you think we should be doing in Australia to become better at adopting change and adopting new technologies?
I think it's one of those things that the survey has shown that from a business perspective, that people, while people being a barrier, it's probably a communication gap in terms of that being realistically a change or a change issue. So if we can focus in on the communication piece, and it's about really making sure you follow a very set and defined change management program when rolling out any type of technology change or any type of process change within a business.
So, do you think it goes higher than that, though? Do you think the technology suppliers, like Canon and like companies that do implementation of these new technologies, the way they deal with management of companies needs looking at?
Well, I think that needs to be part of your change management methodology, and we sort of follow a pretty set process here at Canon, and within the white paper we quite often reference AGL, which is a good customer of ours and a really good indication of how a well thought out change management process can really benefit a technology rollout. And you know, there's probably five really key sort of steps to follow, and one of those is ensuring that you really have engaged leadership within the business so that people understand why change is happening and it's being led throughout the business. So, without being able to, define those key visions and strategies and make sure your stakeholder groups and key influencers are, that leadership position is really, really important.
And you've got to get those leaders all the way from the boardroom down to the, the leaders on the shop floor to be keen and excited about changes that are happening.
Absolutely, that's exactly correct. So it's a really key point in making sure that those goals are really clearly defined so that you have a real understanding, not from just a leader coming into the business or a manager coming into the business explaining why a change is going to happen and leaving their employees feeling a little bit unsure as to why that change is going to happen. You've got to remember, people get very comfortable in their ways of working. And, I guess a technology change in particular can often bring a rather large change to that, and it's important that you manage how that process is implemented, because at the end of the day, those end users are the people that need to actually implement that. They need to follow and utilize the technology that you've put in place to make those changes to the way they work to ensure that you get the productivity benefits you're looking to see. And if they're not engaged, it can be a real challenge to really, drive through those efficiency gains you're looking to make from any project.
I think you're right, Luke. I mean, I know that, people can get very cynical about change for change's sake. And people often say, why are we changing this? Why are we, this process doesn't need to be changed, and this is a waste of time or it's a waste of money. But it's up to organisations themselves to have, a really good, robust change management process, like you were saying, and for the people who are up the top to be able to communicate effectively to everybody and say, this is why we are doing this, and these are the benefits that we're going to realise, and certainly to try and address the issues of, uncertainty and fear of the unknown. I think that's what it comes down to, doesn't it?
Well, I agree 100%, and certainly the survey spelt that out. And it was interesting to see that people were rated as the biggest barrier to change. But I think that, really that stems, as I said, from communication, and that sort of flowed right through the survey results when you looked at that barriers to change perspective.
Luke, are the results available online on the Canon site by chance?
Most certainly are. So the white paper is available for download, and it's certainly an interesting read, I think, for any business leader or anyone who works in business in general, is about how Australian businesses view change, and it's such an important area that we certainly were interested in the results, and I think it would be interesting for anyone in business to have a read.
Yeah, very interesting indeed. Luke, thank you very much for your time this evening. We've been talking with Luke Madison, the Group Product Manager, Business Marketing for Canon Australia, about a new survey which is on their website, available for download, called Change or Be Left Behind. So a bit of an interesting read. Go and have a look, especially if you're one of those people in business that likes rolling out new things. So once again, thank you very much, Luke.
And, no problem at all, Andrew. Thank you for joining.
We'll be back with more after this.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So how do I do this calculation?
They called me on my mobile to ask me where the data was bad.
Or am I the last geek standing?
It's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Probably a little bit harsh.
I'm remembering conversations I didn't have.
Can I just say...
That would be a benchmark.
It would.
Maybe there is truth to that.
No.
Maybe.
Those same clueless people have now got iPhones.
Oh, dear.
Now, hang on.
Because it's
entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio. It's everywhere you need it. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Well, those promos, Dr. Ron, are very controversial in the studio.
Graham's trying to defend himself
Absolutely.
Now.
I'm using my words against me.
From what he got caught saying.
Absolutely. Taken out of context.
What I said was reasonable. The reaction
was. I smacked him down in an ancient tongue. I used Latin. How's that?
Oh, really? That's very impressive.
Straight to the burns unit.
Can I tell you what we heard as opposed to what you said?
I think you might have heard what I said. I think what I said might not have been what I meant to say during the break. This is.
Whoops.
Oh, well, never mind.
Never mind.
We should spend a little bit of time just reflecting on a few other things before we hit some computer game news very shortly. Unix co-creator Dennis Ritchie passed away during the course of the week, the father of the C programming language and co-creator of the Unix operating system after a long illness of 70 years of age. Pretty amazing.
It's interesting that we're starting to lose the pioneers, isn't it? It's, yeah.
Yeah, well, some a little bit before that. 70 is a better, innings than 56 was, just quietly. So...
Now this guy, he was really one of the people that left us with the technologies that we use.
He retired recently too, in 2007. How about that? From Bell Labs, where he joined in 1967. That's a long stint, isn't it?
This guy invented C.
He did, which is a programming language. Are you familiar with it, Graham? Do you write in it?
It's the programming language. It doesn't get much lower than C.
It does, but I can't program in C, but. C is the language of Unix. It's the language that has since spawned Linux. The way the industry's been. End users use PCs and Macs, but the whole business behind the scenes is built on Unix and Linux and C and code written in C.
So there you go. We've lost another one.
There's a well-known reference book that's referred to as K&R, and the R is Ritchie.
Okay.
The authors of the C programming language, a reference book that will be on many programmer shelves.
I'm sure. All right, so Dennis Ritchie passed away at age 70, the man who invented or who devised the C+ or C programming language, amongst other things.
Yep. C, not C+.
What's the difference between C+ and C?
A plus.
C.
Thank you. Ask a silly question.
C+ is an incremental improvement above C.
And there's also C++.
It's like an S instead of a 4.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Okay.
But I'm
glad I asked.
But it's clever because plus is an increment of something in that language. So C plus is an increment ahead of C. It's very clever.
Fortunately, most people in this room don't own a BlackBerry. Otherwise, they'd be swearing and cursing and seething about an outage which has taken out a lot of the modern world of recent days. Millions of people across Europe, the Middle East and Africa were left without BlackBerry email messaging or Twitter. That was basically after one of the RIM servers decided to fall over and kick up its toes at some point in time.
BlackBerries are just such the Nokias of smartphones, aren't they?
Yeah, I don't know. I think RIM's market...
that almost doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. I was going to move on from that. RIM's market share has slowly fallen from favour. In favour of BlackBerry's. And I think there's at least 10 million more people that are moving across to buy, in the queues, to buy an iPhone 4S.
Moving to iPhones from BlackBerry's,
Yeah. Also, it's worth noting, too, that Google released their new flavour of Android during the course of the week, which fell on deaf ears for a lot of people, the ice cream version.
Yes.
Yeah, ice cream sandwich.
Ice cream sandwich.
Unfortunately, thanks to an unwillingness to adopt change in some of our major telecommunications companies and so on... A lot of us aren't going to see it.
Yeah.
Correct. This whole thing with RIM, though, we don't see these problems happening on other smartphone platforms, do we?
No, because...
Well, it's not a closed system, the other smartphone platforms.
No, the
to a degree.
The BlackBerry system relies on BlackBerry servers to be the middle point in between the company's email system and or the company's collaboration system and the phone itself. There's a BlackBerry server in between, and this is not the way in general that iPhones and Android phones work.
I remember trying to set one up for a colleague recently, and it had you have to log into a web portal to put your email settings and things like that. You don't sort of like do it on the phone. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not a user, but it didn't seem logical to me to actually set it up.
No.
Anyway, a switch failure was the result of the reason behind the RIM's outage during the course of. If anyone in the chat's experienced this firsthand, let us know.
How can one single point of failure like that have such a devastating impact on so many
How
millions
long was
of
the
users?
Outage? Did we?
I think it's days, yeah. It's probably still going in a lot of respects. It's a bit like the traffic system losing their computer and all the lights go random. But even still, they were getting nothing through. There was no randomness about it. It just didn't want to communicate, did it?
In the US, a Vermont senator described this week's BlackBerry outage as heaven, revealing there may be such a thing as too much connectivity.
Oh, well, there you go. At least they all had a good holiday. Here's something else interesting during the course of the week. You know the 1-800 phone numbers?
I do.
Yeah.
And traditionally from a fixed line, these are a free call.
Yes, but they're not from a mobile.
Yes. No, they're not from a mobile phone.
No, but there's an inquiry about this going on, and that's what you're about to talk about.
Yeah, the Australian Communications and Media Authority have basically sort of said, guys, a 1-800 number is a 1-800 number. It doesn't matter where you ring it from. And the telcos are sort of basically arced up and said, well, we have to renegotiate all these contracts with all these providers and stuff. Well,
yeah, because
hello?
We've been used to the fine print being that, yeah, it's a free call from a fixed line phone and that if you call it from a mobile phone, that charges might apply. And we all know when we moved, those of us my age know that when we moved to mobile phones, that we got charged what we used to call airtime fees we're not paying to connect to the number, but we do have to pay to use the mobile phone airtime.
Yeah, I remember that. It used to be on the very first and early mobile phone bills, didn't it? It used to have a radio frequency or radio spectrum fee or something like that, which they then built into the call cost. Maybe that's what you're paying for. Anyway, the Australian Communications and Media Authority's discussion paper issued proposed to eradicate the charges for the calls, which is traditionally good. And the decision will affect some 100,000 organisations that run 291,000 active free local rate numbers.
There's a lot of money involved in this. This is not an insignificant number of calls.
No.
Because we're not just talking about the 1-800 free call numbers here. We're also talking about the 1-300 numbers and the 1-3 numbers that are from a, you know, cost of a local call numbers that on the mobile phone aren't cost of a local call either.
Yeah, from a fixed line there, 10 cents, for example, or 1-300.
But I think with the diversity of mobile phone users these days, there's a hell of a lot of them, people who've come from all types of socioeconomic backgrounds. And in a lot of respects, some people don't have fixed lines anymore. And if those people need to ring a 1-800 number for whatever reason...
And now you're getting to the nub of the problem, because there's kind of two classes of problem here. One is that, okay, people are getting slugged a bit of extra money when they ring for a pizza. And that's, you know, ringing a 1-300 number to order a pizza, something like that. That's one part of the problem. The other part of the problem is much more serious, and that's people ringing a 1-800 support line, you know, suicide prevention lines, kids helpline,
lifeline, all those
sorts of things.
Yeah.
Those sorts of things. And, you know, if you're a young teenager, you've got a prepaid mobile phone, you might have very limited amount of credit. Part of your problem that you need help with might be money management or a lack of cash.
Well, crisis management.
Gambling addiction or something like that.
And you have to wait half an hour on Lifeline or Kids Helpline or something like that, and you run out of credit while you're waiting to talk to somebody who can help you.
Absolutely.
I'm wondering whether we need a new class of, you know, we've got the 1-800 free call that's free call from a fixed line. Whether we need a special class of number that's for crisis help, for community services type free calls that can, you know, still allow the mobile phone companies to charge you a bit extra for, you know, ordering your pizza online or whatever it might happen to be. Because you're getting an extra service and it's something like, but maybe we need a class of service for community service lines that can be free from any phone anywhere in the country.
Well, I agree with you, but I also think the 1-800 number, which is a free call, always has been a free call from a fixed line, why that can't now roll out into, because there's so many users to absorb the cost of, you know, spectrum, if that's the real reason, why we can't, what the ACMA are doing and take it back to a free call number.
Sort of like being unmetered, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, the issue...
Leave the 1-300 numbers if you need them, but get a free 1-800 number.
The issue with that would be that the costs would flow back to... if you're a company that's running a 1-800 number, you would know that costs a lot of money to run. That, you know, the customers aren't getting slugged, but you sure are.
Yeah.
If you make them all free for everybody, that's a lot of money that's got to be made back by the telcos. They're going to slug the customers that have got the numbers rather than the customers that are ringing the numbers, and that's going to be a killer for organisations as we're talking. community organisations that we're talking about. And again, I'm still saying perhaps we need to have a class of service for those community organisations that doesn't get slugged. And it probably should be part of the obligations of having a carrier licence that the phone companies should wear it.
I agree. No argument here.
Yeah, like we have a provision that they provide, you know, a 000 emergency service, that they provide public phones, that, you know, those sorts of public service obligations that the telcos have.
Yep, I agree. All right, that'll obviously become bigger as time goes by. A lot of hacking going on during the course of the week. Sony again, Mikey again. Oh, well, actually, for the first time.
Xbox
2. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, Sony got done again for 93,000 user accounts. Once again, they sort of, yeah, good luck to you, Sony. Mikey, this is a bit of a laugh, isn't it? In Victoria, we have this, how would you call it, Dr. Ron? It's a electronic ticketing system based
public on... public transport ticketing system.
Yeah. Someone worked out how to, I don't know, read the card, wasn't it, electronically, so you could see the last 10 transactions.
Yeah, well, it's scientists and researchers, computer engineers, boffins, propeller heads.
Oh, so not hackers. They're just people that have decided to reverse engineer a Mikey ticket,
they're pretty clever people. And based on the time it takes to hack a card, it's quite clearly they're brute forcing the card.
Yeah, nothing
they're
better saying, to do with their time, obviously.
Well, no, they're enthusiasts or researchers, so they're saying, well, maybe up to 7 hours they can hit a card and they can find out.
Using what sort of computer?
Don't have that information in front of me, Graham. I'm not sure.
The reason I ask is that in the last couple of years, organisations have made it possible to rent time on supercomputers at very, very competitive rates. It's not expensive to rent a few hours on a supercomputer. And if you want to rort the public transport system and you just need to brute force a few cards to do it, yeah, probably not a big ask for a big return.
Mm.
You know, if you can,
well, it's going to cost the government $8.1 million, which is just money well spent, like the MyKey system is. I'm all for conductors, if you ask me. Put them back on the safer all round, cheaper, better, smarter.
Well, MyKey said that they've got no intention of replacing any MyKey
cards. Of course not.
What they've said is that they don't have customers don't have to worry about security.
Yeah,
If somebody did go to the extraordinary lengths of hacking a card, all they would see is the actual transactions on the card. They wouldn't actually see any bank details or personal information.
Oh, very good.
So,
All right. And before we have a bit of computer games news, MacBook Pros, if you're looking at picking up one of those, apparently there's a new model in the not-too-distant future because stock is running out of the old models.
You've got Lena's attention now.
Have I?
Yeah.
Okay. Updates to all MacBook Pro models have appeared in Apple's inventory system for 13, 15, and 17-inch screen sizes. And Apple will continue to ship two 13-inch models, two 15-inch models, and one 17-inch models. This MacBook Pro refresh will not be the expected redesign that you're probably hoping for, but will be likely to bring marginally faster processors and the Bluetooth 4 technology that Apple started shipping in the last MacBook Airs and the new iPhone 4S. Happy about that?
Yes.
Is that good? All right, your turn.
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
Hello, hello.
Brief
We're
is the
to
word.
Talk Games brief. Okay. Xbox have been stung by hackers as well.
Oh, what happened? Same
not,
as Sony? No.
Not quite to the degree of Sony. It's only sort of accounts one by one have started showing patterns, so it's not a massive cyber attack like we've seen in the past.
Are they getting personal details or is it just people?
They're getting credit card details and spending people's credits online. So it's specifically happening a lot in FIFA 12. Numerous Xbox Live accounts have found themselves hacked this week, with the hackers choosing to spend the FIFA 12 credits earned by the players and accessing their credit card details to do so as well. So they're going in and spending all the points that you've earned in the game, which is not very nice, not very sportsmanlike. Boom, boom.
No.
Microsoft have been quick to respond by freezing a number of gamer tags while they investigate what's going on. But they've
quick
said
to respond. That's a good sign from Microsoft.
Yes, but they've said that there's no news on how these hacks came about. So, as always, as a rule of thumb, monitor your usage of your consoles, and with anything online with your credit card, keep an eye on your bill. And there was a specific guy who was tipped off that this was happening to his account because there was credits being spent while he was at work.
Ooh.
So that's if you a look giveaway, at, yeah, isn't it? Look at the time and look at when you're playing and monitor your usage.
Do you get an email from Microsoft saying that thank you for your purchase or thank you? Yeah, you do.
Yes, you do.
And if you, well, there's the telltale sign, isn't it?
That's a big one.
People watch in your inbox during your day to day.
I think some people like to turn off email notifications and things, though.
Oh, really? So, well, maybe here's a reason to turn them back on again.
Or the hacker might change it to be another email address.
Yes.
Oh, well, that's a thought, isn't it? You could get in there and. But at least
get all your notifications to your own account,
yes.
Not that of your victims.
Yes, that, yes.
I mean, that's what I would do if I hacked somebody's account. I'd change the notification address, make all my transactions, and then change the address back.
Make note. Send it off to mailinator.com. One of those.
Another big news today.
Yep.
Batman Arkham City broke street date. So it's supposed to be out on the 19th, and it was out a few days early.
Really? Why did they do that? Why did they bring it out early? Did someone nick
it? Someone was being naughty.
Oh, yeah. There's always a reason,
isn't
there?
Someone in one of the shops. I think it was...
Someone left the master tapes in a field in Kent?
No, it was something ending with a B, a retailer ending with a B.
Oh, okay.
Decided...
Wouldn't have been a courier company. They can't do that here.
No, they said, no, we won't wait for the 19th. We'll start selling them now. We'll pull them out of the back and start putting them on the shelves.
Did the names of the retail start with an E?
It may have, or a J.
Oh, that covers a multitude of sins.
Interesting.
Yeah. A lot of yellow involved, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
So that's the big shock from today.
Very colourful.
Batman Arkham City is the sequel to Batman Arkham Asylum, which came out in 2009, I think.
Okay.
It's had an
Has it been most anticipated?
Yes.
Oh,
it's
good.
It's had an amazing reception so far.
What platforms?
Metacritic's, it's on PS3, Xbox 360, Windows, and the new Wii U.
Wii U now. What's a Wii U?
Wii U, I'll talk about that next week, I think.
Oh, okay. I've got a Wii, I haven't got
Metacritic
a Wii U.
Metacritic gave it a 98 out of 100.
Whoa, that's high.
Yeah, the Australian official PlayStation magazine awarded it a perfect score of 10, stating that the game is not only the best superhero game ever made, it's one of the best games ever made at all. It brings the Cape Crusaders
They're not overselling
to life,
this, are they?
Better than any comic, movie, or television show before it.
Oh.
Game Informer, which is one of my favourite sources, also gave it a perfect score of 10, labelling it the best licensed video game ever made.
As opposed to an unlicensed one.
This is why they wanted to break street date, so everyone would rush to their shop and buy it from them.
Ah, so word got out that someone was selling it and they snuck in to pick up a copy.
Yes, and it's a very, very popular game already.
Well, I want to know what the Wii U is. That's really good, but you'll have to tell us next week because we're running out of time.
The voice of the Joker is being played by a little guy. You might have heard him. Mark Hamill.
So, Mark Hamill is the voice of the Joker.
He's the voice of the Joker in this one. And Kevin Conroy is Batman.
Oh, I've got a bad feeling about this.
You got a bad feeling about that? Wait for you to hear what Dr. Ron's got up for your sleeve.
The playable characters are Batman, Nightwing, Robin and Catwoman.
Okay.
So you can play as any of those, which is kind of cool.
Not the Joker?
No.
Oh, bugger.
The only villain you get to play is Catwoman.
Oh, I like playing it. Well, she's cute anyway. I like Catwoman. Meow.
She's good. She's very acrobatic in her character.
Nimble.
Yes.
Nimble little minx.
And one more thing. The TF2 community has earned $2 million through the in-game market so far. They've started releasing community-created items and letting them have their own little economy in the Manco microtransactions within the game.
Yeah.
And so everyone who's been making stuff and selling it online through that, it's now surpassed $2 million for a four-year-old game.
Wow.
Good.
That's impressive, isn't it? Oddspot Gadget website of the week coming up after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
You should have seen the odd spot that Andrew sent me. That's with tone raised.
Sorry, Adelaide. Sorry, Brisbane. Sorry, Canberra. Sorry, Darwin.
Oh, it'll get there in the end.
A question for Lena, gamer and mum.
Hey, that's me.
It's no good writing an agreement that's only enforceable in 1850.
Java, my friend. Java.
Yeah.
Could be Java.
Yeah.
Have you got a spare Google Plus invite? Yeah, it's in the mail.
Yay, my first nerd alert.
I think that's the first nerd alert.
It is.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole!
In the tablet market space, where manufacturers are tirelessly competing for elbow room, Kogan, we're talking about Kogan Technologies earlier in the program, last week released not one but two new devices. The Kogan Agora 8-inch and 10-inch Android-powered tablets. The CEO of Kogan Technologies, Mr. Ruslan Kogan, said in a statement last week the company had received a lot of constructive feedback over the past few months and that had resulted in direct changes to the new range. The tablets will ship with Android 2.3, 512 megabytes of RAM, a 1 gigahertz processor, wireless B and G, and 4 gigabytes of internal storage. But you'll need an extra external micro SD card if you want to store more information or you need more space. It's got a built-in webcam and a microphone. RRP is $229.
That's cheap, isn't it? Are these tablet things going to take off, do you reckon?
I don't know. We'll have to get one. I think Adam's the sort of person that would snap one up and put it through the hoops.
Yeah.
But for $229, wow, it's a lot cheaper than an iPad.
Yeah.
But then you get what you pay for, don't you?
You do. You don't have probably don't have a store behind. Well, I don't know.
Well, you do. You've got the Android market.
But
it depends on whether the apps that you need and the what you plan to do with it is doable on Android.
Or you want a web browser on a tablet while you're sitting on the couch watching TV.
Or a mail client.
Or a mail client might be all you need.
We should talk about that. Tablets are great on the couch.
The expected dispatch date is the 4th of November, so you can pre-order online if you're interested.
Mr. Kogan can send us one. We'll have a look at it.
There you go, Andrew. It's the gadget, the Kogan Agora 8-inch and 10-inch Android tablets.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Everyone in the studio has been waiting
for
this.
Not another one of these.
We've been looking at it all
night. StuffSiriSaid.com.
I usually type in your website, but I've already got it
open. You've already got it open in a tab.
Kept it a good secret, Dr. Aaron. Well done.
We suggested DamnYouSiri.com as a website, didn't we?
We did.
Well, someone actually registered that, and it's currently parked at GoDaddy.
Good. DamnYouSiri. I reckon we should have got that.
But StuffSiriSaid.com. If you take a screenshot of your humble personal assistant's wittiest responses, you can email or submit it to this website. You can submit stuff that Siri says. There's even an online archive and an RSS feed if you want to monitor the funny submissions.
Well, it's been going off in here tonight. There. Let me tell you, between the breaks, you guys have been searing away.
There's some very funny stuff. Graham?
Some stuff we can't probably put to air either, shall we?
No.
There are some other ones as well. There's a Tumblr version, which, yes, I'll put some links in the show notes, probably not for G-rated radio, but there's some funny collections that people are starting to amass. But that's our website, Andrew. StuffSiriSaid.com.
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
Are you an Android user?
Nah. You know that.
Do you have Siri Envy?
No.
Yes,
I do now.
Oh, really?
We've mentioned this on the show before too. Vlingo is the app of the week, Andrew. Oh, Graham's just
had a nervous epileptic. No, what do you call it? Anaphylactic
response to.
Yes, I'm allergic to.
To Vlingo.
Yeah.
Your very own Android virtual assistant. Simply, Graham.
That has no sense of humour.
Speak to Vlingo and it will help you get done faster.
No, you're right. It has no sense of humour.
It'll get more done faster and easier than ever before.
You need a sense of humour to use it, in fact.
You can send texts and emails, voice dial.
If you talk to an American, it works a lot better than if you speak to an Australian. But I hear that's the same problem.
Hang on, I'll pull down this fader for you, Dr. Ron.
Thanks, that'd be good. Find local restaurants, shops, other businesses, get directions, update your Facebook and Twitter statuses, get answers to just about any question. The list goes on. If you're interested, it's in the Android marketplace. But again, buyer beware. Graham's not a fan. Andrew's not a fan.
No, I'm not. I had no luck with that at all, I'm afraid.
I use it. Can I just say, Vlingo started off really, really well, and it's gone downhill.
Why? What's happened?
Oh, I just think that they've made it too complex, and it's lost a lot of its shine because it became too complex. Like, you look at Siri, well, for those who have it, and it's...
Which is also too complex.
Oh, I don't know.
What I wanted my phone to do was what my Nokia did, my Nokia that I had before it to do. I push a button, I say a name, it rings the number. I want something that simple. Mine doesn't.
You got a hair lip or something.
Our app of the week, Andrew, Vlingo for Android.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bond. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Israeli police arrested 21 people in September, including several private investigators, for selling and distributing sophisticated software that allowed them to hack and track mobile telephones. The illegal software allows people to eavesdrop on incoming and outgoing calls and look through text messages and find the location of the device at any given moment.
Did these people work for the News of the World?
No, well, I don't know. They were people including private investigators.
Yeah, they
says.
Did. They did.
The program was mostly used by men and women who believed their partners were having affairs.
Oh, dear.
Police used an undercover agent who asked to have the software installed on a mobile phone. The police investigation is continuing.
I see.
I'd be a bit worried if there was software on my phone that let people monitor my telephone calls.
That's you a need
bit a, scary.
As they say in the American movie, you need a warrant for that, don't you?
I think that's the point. So the police have actually identified that these people were doing naughty illegal things. They've arrested them.
Well, very good. And that is Tech Talk Radio for this week. It went very quick tonight.
It did go fast
tonight. Send out a cheerio to Brian in the office, who announced his engagement to the lovely Tanya today.
That was exciting news, wasn't it?
It was. So there'll be
a Tech Talk Bucks night coming up.
Absolutely.
Oh, no.
Do I get to go?
We'll do a live cross if it's on a Monday night.
We're being marginalised if I don't get to go.
No, you can come. You can come. That's all right.
We'll discuss that after the program.
Notice Graham's not saying anything.
A big thank you to Luke Madison from Canon Australia for contributing to tonight's program.
Thank you, Linesman. Thank you, Ball Boys. It's been fun. We'll do it again next week. Not many to go now. Till then, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.